kingstonfm.ca, Kingston's only campus community radio station. Tune in for the best local programming.
Visit the Screening Room, Kingston's only independent movie theater located downtown at 120 Princess Street. They specialize in playing art house, international classic, and cult cinema, along with Hollywood's best new releases. People also always say they have the best popcorn in town. Visit Screening Room at screeningroom.com for upcoming show dates and ticket information.
Good morning. It is 11 a.m. on Friday, August 1st, and you're tuned in to CFRC 101.9 FM, broadcasting from Lower Carruthers Hall on Queen's Campus in Kingston, Ontario. I'm CFRC's broadcast journalist, Christina Laurie, and this is Kingston Currents. CFRC's news programming is brought to you by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada under the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, What'll I Wear at 732 Princess Street, and The Screening Room at screeningroomkingston.com. At the bustling street corner of Princess and Montreal Street, local artist Abby Nowakowski is hard at work painting a seldom-noticed traffic control box with the help of the city's public art coordinator, Taylor Norris. Nowakowski described her critter-inspired piece, finding home between the cattails and the trilliums.
The piece itself is inspired by lots of local critters that are here. So we've got like a northern flicker, great blue heron, trilliums, cattails, a fox, a turtle. And I chose all of those creatures by, I reach out to kind of my community on socials and ask like, you know, Kingston folks, what kind of critters would you like to see in this mural? So try to fit as many as possible onto this box.
This piece is part of the Traffic Control Box Pilot Project, an initiative to brighten downtown by transforming traffic control boxes along Princess Street into vibrant pieces of public art. The project aims to support local artists, bring vibrancy to the downtown core, while also helping to deter graffiti. The city has commissioned five local artists working in different styles and mediums: Ben Nelson, Grace Dixon, Sasha Jimenez French, Aaron Wan, and Abby Nowakowski. Norris noted that local businesses and city staff have been advocating for this initiative to bring some more color downtown. Norris shared a bit more about this project with CFRC.
So for the first phase of this project, I have been working with local artists to sort of experiment with using these traffic control boxes as a platform for public art in downtown Kingston. So we're doing two different strategies. We're going to do a couple that are painted with murals. So that's what Abby and I are doing today. And then two others will be done in a vinyl wrap. Just to see how the project works, how the community likes it, if painting is better than vinyl, if they both work. So for this first phase, I directly commissioned artists through our temporary public art program, and our policy were able to do that. So I invited Abby. I had seen her mural work before, and I thought it would be a great addition to the pilot project to experiment with. And I know that Abby would be a really good fit for this location at Montreal and Princess in front of Rocking Horse. So that's, yeah. Normally these boxes are just painted black. They hold all the controls for traffic lights at every intersection that has them. So they're like a really great just blank canvas.
For artists like Nowakowski, opportunities like this have been few and far between in the past, but she notes the landscape is changing with projects like this.
Have opportunities like this been becoming more abundant in Kingston? What's kind of the landscape that we're looking
at? That's a really good question. I feel like I want to say yes, that it has become more abundant, but I think that's because there's people like Taylor who are actively wanting to create and advocate for opportunities. But with that advocating, we need more funding, right? So the more people see cool things like this and appreciate, it means there's gonna be in the future more need and want for artists to be paid for, you know, creating culture in Kingston, because there's so many local artists here. So it's nice to kind of pull on what we already have happening here in Kingston.
Artists are also adapting, making sure they're ready to take on unique opportunities.
being an artist today means like wearing a lot of different hats. When we get access to, you know, art making opportunities, paid art making proper opportunities, it's easy to jump on them and say a hard yes, because those type of opportunities unfortunately don't come up that often. Yeah, it's a pleasure to be gifted this opportunity.
With this first wave of public art underway, Norris hopes the project can continue to bring color to unexpected places.
I mean, we've got no shortage of these traffic control boxes across the city. And we've got no shortage of like pre-existing like utilitarian architecture and infrastructure that can be activated as platforms for public art. So this first phase, we're working out all the kinks, you know, the boxes are all in different condition. So what are the prep needs? What is the cost of prep? Like, what contractors do I need to work with? What work do I need to do? What artists will work best? You know, it takes 3 to 4 days to install a mural, so that requires us to be on site. So that means we have to navigate weather, traffic, all those sorts of things. And then with the vinyl, it gives me an opportunity to work with artists who work in digital mediums, digital illustration, graphic design. And then those boxes require a different level of support and prep to get the art onto those. So I'm hoping we'll see how everything goes over the winter, see how the murals last, what damage happens, if any, hopefully not, and then the community feedback. And ideally, we'll be able to expand the program next summer to more and more locations across the city.
Two boxes are complete and three are still in progress, and passersby downtown are already taking notice.
We're just really excited to be able to get more ground level opportunities.
Thank you. I'm not used to making in such a public sphere, so it's actually been such a nice and validating thing to be actively making and having the people who will be admiring this for the next little while. And, you know, this is ultimately they're all gonna own this piece basically, because now this is gonna be in their neighborhood. So to hear everyone kind of being like, oh, that's so nice, it makes us feel good. Yeah.
No, it's great. It's been really positive, and a lot of people didn't even know these boxes were here. Mm-hmm. So now that they've got these murals on them, they're like, how long has this box been here? Mm-hmm. And we're like, over a decade. Mm-hmm. Just to be able to bring some vibrancy and beautiful art to a street corner, will hopefully, you know, brighten everybody's day as they pass by, kind of thing.
The Great Lakes Museum has announced that the SS Kate Wayton has been selected as the 2025 Museum Ship of the Year by the Steamship Historical Society of America, SSHSA. The Kate Wayton, an Edwardian-era passenger steamliner, was acquired by the museum in 2023 and opened to the public in May 2024. The SSHSA is a nonprofit organization founded in 1935 that now has thousands of members. Their mission is recording, preserving, and sharing the history of engine-powered vessels for education and research purposes. The Kate Wayton was nominated for this award by SSHSA members and chosen by the organization's awards committee. Great Lakes Museum Executive Director Beth Shippers shared her initial thoughts when she heard the news.
We were thrilled. We were absolutely thrilled that we were chosen by the Steamships Historical Society of America for this award. They have members that are international, and there's thousands of members. So the fact that we were nominated and then chosen by them was really kind of awe-inspiring for us. We are thrilled mostly because of how it acknowledges the hundreds of people that have been working hundreds of thousands of hours over the past many years, you know, tirelessly renovating her and promoting her through public educational programs. And we also, you know, are thankful because it also, recognizes that the community that's been supporting the ship and the museum, contributions from donors and foundations and governments and local organizations that also support us in kind with materials and labor, you know, all of which working towards her preservation and the success that she has as a tourist destination. And, you know, getting the recognition for that has been really special for us all.
Shippers also dove into the work staff, volunteers, and board members have been putting in behind the scenes.
the ship will be a labor of love for many, many years ahead. When she arrived in October 2023, there was probably up until the weekend we opened for tours, people were working every single day for probably 10, 12 hours a day, working on, you know, new carpets, renovating, like repainting and working on handrails and revarnishing, like the number of things that were being worked on. I mean, I can't even explain them all. There's so many. Everything from fixing up the engine room. The engine is spotless. They spent so much time cleaning her up and making her very presentable for the public so that we could actually explain what they're looking at. Also, I would mention the hundreds of hours of the staging crew that went through and itemized all the artifacts that are on the ship. So everything from clothing to records to instruments, magazines, silverware, everything that's, you know, that came with her. And staging her to be presentable as though you were a passenger walking on. So you have that feel of the passenger experience. It's been a lot of work.
The museum celebrated the recognition on Saturday, July 26th.
We had members from the SSHSA come down, and that's the Steamship Historical Society of America. So members of their board came down. We had Ted Hsu was here, our MPP. We had the deputy mayor. We had the board members. Community people came out from across Kingston. Lots of staff and volunteers were here. It was like a really nice celebration.
It was announced on Tuesday that a new connection will link Kingston's Norman Rogers Airport to Toronto Pearson International Airport. Air Canada, in partnership with ground transportation company Landline, is launching a service to bring passengers from YGK Airport to Pearson via a luxury motor coach service. The service, which launches on September 23rd, is being billed as a seamless connection. Travelers can book a single itinerary on Air Canada's website, check in at Kingston's airport, and continue on to a connecting flight from Pearson, all under one booking. Two round trips will run daily between YGK Airport and Pearson, with the bus having space for 36 passengers. Bernard Tavernier, manager of regional airlines and markets with Air Canada, expanded on what the service will offer.
This innovative ground-air connection is designed to make regional travel more convenient, reliable, and accessible. Customers can now book a single itinerary through Air Canada that includes a comfortable Wi-Fi equipped motor coach ride with Kingston, from Kingston to Pearson and vice versa, all timed perfectly within the Air Canada flights. We'll introduce a double daily service connecting customers from airport to airport, providing seamless airline experience. Travelers will enjoy checked baggage transfer, coordinated schedules, and the ease of going from Kingston to global destinations through one smooth connection.
Tavernier also had the following response when asked about the price point.
So the goal for this is to have minimal fare, if not none, and to beat all markets. We want to ensure that customers that are using this are using it as an asset to book on Air Canada flights. So the goal is to beat every other market out there.
Since Air Canada suspended its regional flights to and from Kingston Airport in 2020, the city has been working to bring air service back. Craig Desjardins, Director of Strategy, Innovation, and Partnerships with the city, spoke to the significance of this addition to travel options.
It's been incredibly challenging. Obviously, post-pandemic, the aviation sector has just been hammered. But to be able to be constantly working to try and bring air services back, it's been frustrating at times. The most recent frustration is the U.S.-Canada tariff issues, which has had huge impact on sort of travel to the States, which has obviously impacted the airlines. But, you know, again, working with good partners is the key. Working with a partner like Air Canada that has the global network, being able to come into Pearson Airport and jump on and be here directly. Again, it's all about service. It's all about quality. If you haven't had a chance to jump on the bus, it's like a business class seating. It's got high-speed Wi-Fi. It's a pretty nice service.
City Councilor Wendy Stevens says the service will be a game changer for local travelers.
The multimodal nature of this is really exciting, and I think it really is an opportunity to remove a lot of the frustration that comes with going to Pearson Airport when you can board here, and get there and come home so easily. I think that this is, you know, a real opportunity. There have been calls for this from the community. I'm the district counselor and I get a lot of questions about when are we getting service back? So I'm thrilled that we finally have the ability to get people around the world where they need to go straight from home. So yeah, this is really exciting for students, for faculty, as the Deputy Mayor said, for residents who want to take a vacation, economic development. People are always trying to come to Kingston, and also for tourism, especially too. That's a really key factor. So I think this is a huge win for our community.
The Ontario Land Tribunal has approved of a controversial development on the Davis Tannery lands. Council rejected developer Jay Pathry's proposal to build mixed-use residential and commercial buildings in the area in 2022, a decision that was celebrated by environmental groups as the development will require the clear-cutting of 2,000 trees and will be on land that has been contaminated by years of industry. This decision was appealed by the developer and ultimately the Ontario Land Tribunal largely agreed. In his 78-page decision dated July 25th, Tribunal Vice Chair Steve Cook wrote, quote, "The tribunal is persuaded by the evidence that the proposal promotes efficient development of land, accommodates a large range of appropriate mixed uses, intensifies uses within the settlement area, and contributes to the range of housing options. The development will provide approximately 1,600 housing units, including 100 affordable units." Cook also went on to write that the tribunal was not persuaded by concerns raised, given the evidence offered in support of the planned development. Carrie Hill with No Clear Cuts Kingston, an environmental group which had party status at the hearing, spoke with CFRC after the decision was released.
Flabbergasted really to hear, but at the same time, with Bill 23 last year, it was almost a foregone conclusion.
According to the city's release on Monday, while the Land Tribunal has approved the development, amendments need to be made to both the official plan and the zoning bylaw. Those amendments will be shared in a draft of the new official plan, which will be released to the public in mid-August. One of the significant amendments to the plan is the decision to not allow the developer to cap wetlands at the site.
They are not going to allow the capping of the BSW. So that is very good. We're happy about that. We're not happy about the loss of all that tree coverage. The city, you know, the trees being cut down all around us.
In a statement from the city released earlier this week, Mayor Brian Patterson was quoted stating, quote, "This development marks a major step forward for Kingston, bringing much needed housing to the urban core and remediating the largest brownfield property in the city. I'm excited to see how this project will contribute to the renewal and revitalization of Kingston's Inner Harbor." Hill states No Clear Cuts Kingston will continue to advocate for their cause however they can.
All we can do at this point, I think, is talk to our counselors that we know are on side, which aren't that many left. I mean, when they voted 8-5 against it, that was an old council, you know, before the election a year and a half ago. So we would really like to try to convince the newer members of council that they have to be very careful and ask a lot of serious questions about this whole development. And also we have our lawyers from the CELA, Canadian Environmental Law Association. They are looking into they're reading carefully through their decision and will be helping us, guide us to what we can do next.
Before we get into more local news, I'm going to turn to our weather and traffic report for today featuring CFRC's Jesse Bell.
This is Jesse Bell with the Environment Canada Weather Report for the Kingston region. Friday, August 1st, it's going to be 24 more sunny and clear conditions forecasted. Moving into the weekend, Saturday, August 2nd, daytime high of 25, feeling closer to 27. Sunday, August 3rd, daytime high of 27. It's going to be a beautiful, picture-perfect long weekend here in the city of Kingston. And then moving to the start of next week, the holiday Monday, daytime high of 26, feeling closer to 28 with light humidity factored in. This is the City of Kingston Traffic Report for the week. Here are the road closures for the week. Aberdeen Street, William 2 Johnson is closed to accommodate construction activity and staging. Abbeydon Road, Highway 2 to Middle is closed until August 15th for the removal and replacement of a culvert. Albert Street, Princess and Mac is closed to accommodate construction activity at 484 Albert Street. Berry Street, Queen to Colborne is closed for construction-related activity at 283 Queen Street. Brock Street, Division to Palace is closed until July 31st from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. each day for road resurfacing. Carlton Street, Alfred de Guy is closed until August 8th for a gas main installation. Earl Street, Collingwood to Toronto is closed for sewer separation and road rehabilitation work. South Bartlett Street, Smith to Victoria is closed until August 29th for construction-related activity at 655 Princess Street. Sydenham Street, Princess to Queen is closed until October 3rd for the Sydenham Street Community Space. Victoria Street, Union to Johnson is closed for sewer separation and road rehabilitation work. Victoria, Princess to North Bartlett is closed until August 29th for construction-related activity at 655 Princess Street. And Wise Street, Woodbine to Megan is closed until July 31st to accommodate construction of a new sidewalk and road improvements. Here are some other delays to be aware of. Accommodation Road, 6th Concession to White Church, expect delays while the contractor is completing work on the annual surface treatment contract. Abbeydon Road, Middle to Highway 2, expect delays while the contractor is completing work on the annual surface treatment contract. Bayridge Drive, Milford to Henderson, expect delays for the construction of new active transportation infrastructure. Catterockway Woods Drive, Centennial to Gardeners, expect delays for the construction of a new multi-use pathway. Collins Bay Road, Woodbine to Princess, expect delays while a contractor completes landscaping work on Collins Bay Road. Front Road, Sand Bay to Country Club, expect delays for the installation of sanitary and water main for Utilities Kingston. Traffic is down to one lane in each direction. Gardner's Road at Centennial and Creekford, expect delays while a contractor completes intersection widening, traffic signal upgrades, and cycling and pedestrian improvements. Garrett Road, 6th Concession to Sandhill, expect delays while a contractor is completing work on the annual surface treatment contract. Highway 2 to Abbeydon and St. Lawrence, expect delays to complete enhanced flood protection of Abbeydon Road, Highway 2, and St. Lawrence Avenue. Highway 15, Kingston Mills to Middle, expect delays for a contractor to complete work on the Highway 15 CNR overhead structure. Montreal Street at John Counter, expect delays for upgrades to the intersection, including new lighting, traffic signals, lanes, paving, and signage to improve safety and efficiency for all road users. Victoria Street and Earl Street, expect delays while a contractor mobilizes the site to start work on the second phase of reconstruction of sewer, water main sidewalks, and road. And White Church Road, 6th Concession to Woodburn, expect delays while the contractor is completing work on the annual surface treatment contract.
Thank you, Jesse. Now back to more local news. To kick off the second half of the show, we have a few messages directly from the City of Kingston this week. Changes coming in 2026 for a request to light up City Hall. Community requests to light up City Hall and Springer Market Square will soon follow a new process due to updates to the city's first capital illumination policy. The policy was updated at the City Council meeting on June 17, 2025, after staff proposed changes in response to challenges with the previous policy, including a high volume of illumination requests. The updates will apply to illuminations taking place as of January 1, 2026. The illumination policy sets guidelines for illuminating First Capitol Place, City Hall, and Springer Market Square to mark occasions such as celebrations or commemorations and raise awareness of local history, special events, or community issues. As for why the policy was updated, the illumination policy sets guidelines for illuminating First Capitol Place to mark occasions. Previously, the illumination policy allowed for all requests that met the policy criteria, and there were no limits to the number of illuminations. There are several occasions the city recognizes every year, but most illuminations are requested by community organizations. Charities and nonprofits request displays to honor significant days and raise awareness of occasions that are meaningful to the community. The city facilitates these requests by illuminating City Hall and Springer Market Square to amplify community voices and foster belonging. Vanessa Mensa, Manager of Equity, Diversity, and Inclusion, states, quote, "Illuminations are a form of community-led expression. This initiative highlights the lived experiences, histories, celebrations, and shared values of everyone who calls Kingston home. Staff have revised the policy to better align with the evolving needs of the community and respond to the growing number of illumination requests." Mensa added, quote,
the increased frequency of illuminations can potentially diminish the impact of each display. The changes to the policy will help emphasize the significance of each illumination and its importance within the community. Based on consultation and after researching best practices, the policy was updated to include a total of 90 illuminations per calendar year. This includes 72 illuminations available for public requests, with 18 remaining illuminations listed on their website, reserved annually for occasions that align with Kingston's strategic plan and equity, diversity, and inclusion principles. Menza states, quote, "The updated policy ensures that illuminations reflect Kingston's cultural, historical, and other significant observances to create a welcoming environment for all community members. Applicants will continue to apply online through My Kingston. Illumination requests are no longer reviewed on a first-come, first-served basis. Applications will be reviewed every 3 months. View the full 2026 application schedule on the Memorials and Commemorations page. Applications received after the quarterly deadline will not be eligible for the associated period. Around 15 to 20 applications will be approved each quarter. Applications must be made by nonprofit or charitable organizations based in Kingston or with a local chapter. Staff will process and approve applications and report back to the EDI Advisory Committee during their quarterly meetings. These changes will come into effect for illuminations that take place as of January 1st, 2026. Illumination applications for 2025 will be processed according to the previous policy. As part of the city's commitment to reconciliation with Indigenous peoples and communities, City Hall will continue to be illuminated monthly as a visible commitment to community healing and in honor of the victims of residential schools. Illuminations are just one way to commemorate meaningful occasions in Kingston. Interested groups can also apply for the Neighborhood Activation Fund, Free Space Initiative, a proclamation, or a flag raising to recognize a significant day or event. Once again, that was a message directly from the City of Kingston concerning changes coming in 2026 for a request to light up City Hall. In another message directly from the City of Kingston this week, City seeks public input ahead of relaunch of Better Homes Kingston program, calling all homeowners interested in making their homes more energy efficient and climate friendly. The City of Kingston is seeking input to inform the relaunch of the Better Homes Kingston program. Launched in 2022, the Better Homes Kingston program is a local improvement charge financing program that supports energy retrofits for residential dwellings. With support from the Federation of Canadian Municipalities Green Municipal Fund, the pilot program offered up to $40,000 in loans and incentives to help homeowners reduce greenhouse gas emissions through upgrades like air source heat pumps, solar panels, and improved insulation. 368 completed projects achieved an average GHG reduction of 66% per project, making it one of the most successful energy retrofit programs in Canada. The Better Homes Kingston program is expected to relaunch in 2026. Soren Christensen, project manager of the Climate Leadership Division at the City of Kingston, states, quote, "We're incredibly proud of what the community achieved through the pilot program. Now we're looking ahead to 2026 and want to hear from residents and contractors to ensure the next phase is even more accessible, impactful, and aligned with local needs. To get involved, you can take the survey on Get Involved Kingston before August 14th. Alternate formats are available upon request. You can sign up for the waitlist to receive updates about the program launch. Contractors and others who provide a service are invited to complete the service provider survey. You can also express interest in participating in the September focus groups when submitting your feedback." Once again, that was a message from the city seeking input ahead of the relaunch of Better Homes Kingston in 2026. In a final message directly from the city this morning, Emancipation Day celebrations, remembering the past and working towards a better future. August 1st is Emancipation Day, marking the day Britain's Parliament abolished slavery across most of the British Empire in 1834. It has become an annual day of remembrance and reflection on the struggle for human rights and the ongoing work to eliminate racism and discrimination in Canada. To recognize Emancipation Day in Kingston, a flag-raising ceremony with Mayor Patterson, members of council, and local community leaders will take place at 11:30 a.m., followed by a community services fair from 12:30 to 3 p.m., both in Confederation Park on Friday, August 1st. Vanessa Mensa, Equity, Diversity, and Inclusion Manager with the city, states, quote, "Emancipation Day asks us not only to remember that slavery existed, but to confront how its legacies still live on. It's a call to reckon with the past, honor the strength of those who survived it, and challenge the systems that continue to deny true freedom today. Attending the city's Emancipation Day event is more than just showing up. It's an act of recognition, a step towards learning, and a commitment to building a more just and equitable future together. End quote. Emancipation Day is free to attend and open to all ages. Learn more about Emancipation Day on the city's website. Last week, Kingston Economic Development released a report with a strategic blueprint showing how mid-sized cities like Kingston can build their own film and media ecosystems. The Hyperlocal Ontario Action Plan, authored by Jason Jolly of Branded to Film and backed by Kingston Economic Development, Tourism Kingston, Frontenac Business Services, and Ontario Creates, lays out what's been done and what comes next to decentralize Ontario's film industry and build industries in big little cities like Kingston. Jolly sat down with CFRC and shared the vision behind the report.
What originally prompted me, and it was a theoretical exercise, is how would I build, like, how can you pioneer and build a film industry from scratch? And, you know, like a lot of folks say, well, don't we have a film industry, Jay? And I'm like, well, we have Toronto producers who will come and randomly shoot here every so often, but it's very hard. You don't really have a business model unless you can forecast it, like you can predictably do it. And so my thing was, if you want to build like a film industry, you kind of have to start with like producers and crew, and all the vendors have to be like a full stack entity in a town where, you know, that you can achieve that stuff, like where it's not just a bunch of crew members coming from Toronto that stay here and then go back every 5 days after they've done shot their limestone out and had their ways.
The goal of the action plan was to create a document any community could pick up and apply to their own creative industries.
The report came out of me wanting to kind of open source what we were doing as a model. So other big little cities like Kingston could, if they wanted to look to grow their own industry, this is a different way of thinking. A lot of it was to just write a very easy to read, plain report without any, or it's more of a business intelligence paper, I guess, without any jargon. So any municipality or even someone like yourself could pick it up and it would be very digestible. And you get a really good overview of like the history of film production in Ontario, where we are, and it's what the landscape looks like, and also how we can better support folks like myself, which is independent Ontario producers, you know, with these more affordable, efficient places to practice their productions or execute their productions.
The plan argues that the timing is right for decentralization of the industry from cities like Toronto and Vancouver. High costs and congestion in these hubs have made decentralizing production a necessity, according to Jolly.
Well, I think for anything, decentralization is something that's not just for, you know, like the film industry or even media or the creative industries as a whole. It's actually something that's an affliction of a lot of industries, which is, as you know, like when I first moved to Toronto in the early 2000s, there was like 4.3 million people. Today, that kind of greater Toronto Hamilton area is now 7.5 million. So that's a significant amount of downward pressure. And it's, you know, it's the same kind of thing that happens. Like when we were shooting, you know, we could shoot it, almost get permits anywhere. It was still very like free and independent, and there was a great scene there. But as kind of the bigger like Netflix and things get gentrified, and like even if you're like, say, a visual artist, like you used to live in this industrial loft because it was cheap and nobody wanted to live in it. But now that's where they want to put a condo. So these downward pressures are something that I think affect all kinds of creative industries. And for independent Ontario producers like myself, you know, between the affordability to live, the affordability to do, because we don't have a lot of money to do a production comparatively to, like, you know, if you look at an episode of Star Trek, it's $10 million an episode just for one episode of television. When you look at our little movie, it's like $1 million for one, you know, for a whole movie, which I know sounds like a lot, but it's not. So, you know, I think in general, I think, you know, for society to be healthy, we can't just live in one place. And especially when you have such a, you know, these big little cities like Kingston are super accessible. Like you're right in between Toronto, Montreal, Ottawa. We're about 5.5 hours from, you know, Manhattan. It's a terrific, you know, balance between rural and urban, you know, great nighttime economy. You great restaurant scene, beautiful place to live. And with technology, like it, which is very democratized now, and especially now with things like generative AI and virtual production, you don't really have to live in a big city to do high quality production. And in fact, the tools, these democratic tools, are being more and more, to open sourced in a lot of ways, where, you know, that you can, I believe, and I mention this all the time, where I believe, a filmmaker with $5 million in about 3 to 5 years, whoever she is, will be able to, in a place like Kingston, make a movie that looks like $100 million today by the big studios because of these tools, and how fast these tools are advancing and just being easier to use.
The report covers two case studies. Branded to Film's first feature, Dead Mother Crimson, was a testing ground. It hired 60% local crew and proved an end-to-end production could be done in Kingston. Their follow-up this year, Doom Boogie, pushed things even further. Jolly shared some of the lessons learned so far about what can be done in Kingston.
We just kind of set this random benchmark where we said, well, we're going to employ 60% locals. We're going to figure out how to either, hopefully they have experience or a little bit of experience, or they're from an adjacent industry. You know, so what it did is that first said, not only is it viable, but I think it's like, it's kind of like a skateboard trick. If you can see it, you can be it. Like, my surprise was, here I am 20 years later, and nobody had done $1 million end-to-end production, like that was developed, pre-produced, produced. And once we were able to do that and show that it was possible to do that, I think it opened up a lot of people's eyes, including my own. It's like, wait a second, this is like a real thing now. We can do this. And so we said, well, so that taught me kind of the realization that this isn't just, you know, a theoretical exercise. So we said, here's the practical things. And we were able to train, like, some of the stuff that we were really able to learn. One of them was, we wanted to see, could we make production more sustainable, like really green production? Let's try and avoid, you know, just randomly throwing crap out, and, you know, really think about kind of how we can reduce our carbon footprint and stuff like that through little ideas or just behavioral change. So once we had done that and we realized, well, we need to do another one. And I said, well, this time, why don't we target 75% local hires? And to our amazement, and we got to 87%. We actually over-indexed. And what I found was, one of the things that we really didn't do very well on the first one was, again, talent behind the camera was one thing, but we had kind of, you know, we had met like local theater actors and stuff, and theater actors and film and TV actors they're very different muscle set in a lot of ways. There's a lot of things that are similar, but there's just different ways of execution because, you know, film is very much, you can actually whisper, where theater is it's a lot bigger, like in terms of, so what we did is, you know, on this one, we said we need to make a real concerted effort to tap into actors or in front of the camera. And because of this particular movie, Doom Boogie was kind of about this fictional Kingston band, we decided to look at musicians. And a lot of the folks both on both sides of the camera were actually, and again, I really believe in supporting local musicians, especially because, you know, music is a very, very tough industry. It's more now more than ever. And so we were able to hire them in technical positions. But what was really great is we were able to hire folks like, Kira from Tiny Horse and Jonas in kind of lead actor roles. And what we've discovered there is that actors kind of have 70 or I should say, sorry, musicians have kind of 70% of that thing they need from being performers on stage to be actors, especially like film actors. So that was a great revelation. So that's something we learned on it too. And then consequently, they also contributed to the soundtrack. So we were doubly blessed with that.
According to Jolly, it's not just the lessons learned so far that will propel the industry's growth, but also what the city itself brings to the table.
When people ask, well, what's the secret to your business? I say, or what's your superpower of your business? I always say, my superpower is Kingston. Kingston's like so cool. Like, I'm sure the secret's going to get out. And it's just like, what I learned was, because even on our first movie, we had like 40% were heads of department from Toronto that came and trained. And this one we had even had less. So 13%. And some of them were actors as well. So, but what's interesting is when people came to Kingston, especially technicians from outside, what I realized is a lot of people, unless you went to school here or you were born here, most people have never been to Kingston. And they've driven by it on the 401 and all that kind of stuff. But what was interesting is, you know, usually the first night, like somebody from out of town, like especially, you know, like an actor or film was like the first thing to ask is like, where's a good place to eat? And you kind of say, well, you just open your hand and say, just go down here. And then literally the next day on set, they were like, when are you doing your next movie? How do I move here? This is unbelievable, this place, you know, from, you know, just the beauty and stuff of being in the Thousand Islands, I think, and just the general, you know, what I like to say is sometimes it's like Kingston kind of feels like it's at that kind of stage where it feels like that super cool neighborhood in Toronto, like in the early 2000s or late 90s in a lot of ways, because everybody kind of knows each other. You show up at bars and everybody's kind of like connected in a certain way.
Still, turning this potential into a sustainable industry will take work. Jolly dove into some of the work that's being done right now to bring the plan to life, as well as the challenges.
Our big focus is we really were down to is, you know, over the last 6 months, we partnered with the Tourism Kingston and are really, and also the city of Kingston in terms of, you know, we bought secured some land out in St. Lawrence Business Park, 10 acres. We've been working with a really great design construction firm. We just submitted our site plans. We're about just over, you know, call it between 75-80% finance. So we're just trying to close that last like $5 million. So that's kind of like our full court press. You know, we have a couple term sheets right now and that's kind of, you know, just trying to find the right deal. It's been a really tough year, as you can imagine, between, especially for us, between the LA fires that started the year and then two provincial elections and now our provincial and a federal election. And now, you know, this wild orange man that thinks he's king yelling tariff, tariff, tariff everywhere that's caused a massive distraction, in terms of not only equity, but just getting government attention. So, you know, one of the things we are, you know, we're in discussions with, the provincial and federal government in terms of bringing in some matching funds because this is, you know, like this is creating jobs, significant amount of jobs, but you know, that's kind of, so where we are now is, you know, we'd love to just close the financing. There's a few other kind of opportunities percolating and, you know, we're always working with like my colleagues, in Toronto, other producers to really lure them and kind of show them, hey, look what we did. You can do this too. You know, like, because sometimes, like I said, like that, I really believe as like a skateboarder in my youth that, you know, if you can see someone do a trick, you can do that trick too. So it's kind of like, and that's what I think. It's like, now that we've done two, it's not like the first one could have been a fluke and now we've done a second one. And I was like, okay, there's something here. You know, within the next 10 years, Kingston has the potential to capture, you know, say 3% of Ontario's film and television. Realize that industry is $2.65 billion. Like, and of that, in terms of domestic production, which we're kind of focused on here in Kingston initially, it's about $910 million of that $2 billion is just domestic producers like me. So if we can create that new affordable, efficient home, you know, we could see, you know, if we over-index in terms of what we're forecasting, Kingston could be, you know, like an $80-$100 million industry within the next decade. It's totally doable.
To view the full Hyperlocal Ontario Action Plan, you can visit investkingston.ca/creatives. As a follow-up to that update on Kingston's film industry, we've got an exclusive sneak peek at a track from the upcoming Kingston Shock feature film Doom Boogie, produced by Kingston's own Branded to Film. The movie stars a fictional Kingston band, and fittingly, the entire soundtrack was written and performed by real Kingston artists. You're about to hear the first ever radio airplay of Ola by Manic Sonic.
You're more French than fashion. How do we let this happen? Lemon drops, bunny hops, martini, kerosene. You've got this funny feature where you perfect time to ring. Hopes of some discretion, but you never were so kind. Barber botched the haircut, trying to dodge what's on my mind. Carbon heat, when we meet, we know we should leave. But the bottom of this bottle tastes a lot like dopamine. She said, oh, and you're never gonna give a single thing I ever wanted, so I think that I'm just gonna leave. What you gonna do? You're gonna finish what you started, cause the party's almost over and I'm bored and broken hearted, and you're never gonna give a single thing I ever wanted, so I think that I'm just gonna leave. Bitch fight, long night, bumping off the key, tearing through the papers for your obituary. Mixed bag, tall legs, walk their way to me. Maybe you'll forgive it, or you just won't see. Sentiment is harder when I find it hard to care. This second season version is someone that I can't bear. Tough times, no limes, hospitality. Ladies leaving early looking like a fever dream. You know I really wanna know ya. Let's work it out back on the sofa, honey. You're so sweet. You say I'm killing you, but babe, you're killing me. What you gonna do? You're gonna finish what you started, cause the party's almost over and I'm bored and broken hearted, and you're never gonna give a single thing I ever wanted, so I think that I'm just gonna leave. What you gonna do? You're gonna finish what you started, cause the party's almost over and I'm bored and broken hearted, and you're never gonna give a single thing I ever wanted, so I think that I'm just gonna leave.
Once again, that was the first ever radio airplay of Ola by Manic Sonic, a track straight from Doom Boogie, which is currently in post-production. That is all things current in Kingston for this week. Thank you for listening to CFRC's local news programming, brought to you by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada under the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, What'll I Wear at 732 Princess Street, and The Screening Room at screeningroomkingston.com. To listen on the go and hear more from some of our guests, be sure to head to our podcast network at podcast.cfrc.ca. Coming up next on CFRC's Friday afternoon lineup, at 12 p.m. we have Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman, daily global independent news. At 1 p.m. this just in, new music fresh from the mail, hosted by our music library manager, Chancellor. At 2 p.m. we have Whiplash, anything and everything with DJ LFN. And at 3 p.m. we have the Kingston Curator, all things Kingston local art scene with host Ellie Sturton. Be sure to stay tuned for all this programming and more right here on CFRC 101.9 FM.
Metal Eyewear offers the best in vintage, funky, one-of-a-kind treasures, clothing, accessories, and a fabulous selection of jewels, vintage and new. Find the cutest purse, the most dashing of hats and sunglasses, everything to complete your individual look. What'll I Wear has it all. They can dress you from top to bottom. Find your new fashion fave at What'll I Wear at 732 Princess Street in Kingston. Visit their new location and follow them on Facebook to keep up to date with what's in store at What'll I Wear. Coming up now on this week's Release Radar, in partnership with the Kingston Music Office, we're pleased to present Egg Salad, a brand new release from local jazz musician Oscar Evans. This is an original jazz composition mixing Brazilian rhythms with classic American swing styles, a bold and funky musical exploration featuring some of Kingston's finest jazz players. Catch Oscar literally everywhere and anywhere in Kingston and keep up with the latest by following him on Instagram at Oscar Mayfield Evans. Want to be highlighted next time? Complete the Release Radar submission form on the Kingston Music Office website or via visit kingston.music on Instagram. In the meantime, stream Egg Salad by Oscar Evans on your favorite platforms and enjoy it with us now here on CFRC 101.9 FM.